Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel and Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel and Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hit the music. It's Saturday, it's just after 11, and you know what that means? It's time for the Live Science Radio Show.
Wow, what a totally amazing, excellent discovery.
It will test your head, and your mind, and your brain, too.
Come on, let's go, space trucker!
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
It's Saturday, the 20th of April, 2024. If you're listening on catch up, you listen, of course, to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also go there for the podcast for the show later on and share them if you like. Unfortunately, our guest speaker should be Gareth Morgan this week, but he can't be with us. However, next week, all being well, we've got Chris Dale. He's going to be carrying on his theme about food. And indeed, he's going to be covering obesity and excess weight clinics in the UK. All very interesting and topical stuff. You've got Julian Paul here live. Later in the show, we've got RPG talking about, I think he's talking about tinnitus. Interesting. We've got some interesting stuff coming up. All being well, at some point in the future, we'll also have an ex-colleague of mine as a guest on here, talking about his experience of being diagnosed with and living with multiple sclerosis. So it's a very interesting chat when we get him online. Coming up, some local things first before we get stuck into the nitty-gritty of science in all its forms, because that's what we do, with a bit of cool music in between. Festival of Debate starts Tuesday. Well, it started this Tuesday, the 16th of April, runs until the 25th of May. It's a South Yorkshire festival, but it's mainly based in Sheffield. This year's theme is basically, how can we respond to the climate crisis and biosphere collapse? Check out festivalofdebate.com. Also coming, starting next Tuesday.
Yes, it's Gresley, Genius of Steam and Speed. That runs from this Tuesday right through to Saturday, 21st of September, at the Danham Gallery in Doncaster, which is a library and museum as well. And it's got a cafe as well.
Well worth a visit in the local area. Of course, Gresley designed the Mallard and the Flying Scotsman, would you believe? Amazing. Also, starting next month, runs from Monday the 13th to Wednesday the 15th of May, is the Pint of Science Festival. World's largest festival of public science, set to return to Sheffield. Scientists from the University of Sheffield will be taken to the city's pubs. I bet that won't be a hard task for them. And venues to share their scientific discoveries. Sheffield's joining nearly 500 cities across 25 countries around the world, taking part in the 12th year of this global festival. Tickets on sale now, so check it out. Pint of Science Festival, Sheffield. Oh, something in the press earlier this week, a very interesting one. MPs vote for smoking ban.
Right, the Tobacco and Vapes Bill will make it illegal for anyone born in or after 2009 to ever buy cigarettes. That's in this country. The government says this will effectively raise the legal smoking age by a year each year until it applies to the whole population, helping to create the first smoke-free generation. The bill will also clamp down on e-cigarettes, brackets vapes, that appeal to children. Smoking causes about 80,000 deaths across the UK every year, as well as hundreds of thousands of hospitalisations, bringing with it a £20 billion cost to the economy and wider society. There are still several more steps needed before the Tobacco and Vapes Bill becomes law, such as votes in the House of Lords, but it's possible that the bill could now become law before the general election, expected in the second half of this year. If the Tobacco and Vapes Bill does become law, the UK's smoking laws will be among the strictest in the world.
All interesting stuff. And if you're a vapor or an ex-smoker who currently doesn't vape, Sheffield Hallam University, in conjunction with Leeds Beckett University, are undertaking a study funded by Heart Research UK to explore the long-term effects of vaping on the heart, lungs and arteries. Best thing to do is Google Lenai Research. Lenai Research Sheffield. It will take you to all their studies. There's some fascinating stuff on there. And click on the vaping study. All interesting stuff. Great track, eh? Smoke or Levy on Fume by the Tubes. Yes. Fantastic. Played that because we're talking about the MPs voting for a smoking ban and also about the vaping study that Hallam University are doing. If you've just tuned in and you wonder what on earth you could be listening to this Saturday morning, it's a live science radio show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're every week, 11 till 12, talking about science in all its different forms. I'm just going to do a bit of an environment update for this week before we talk to RPG. The bad news first, oh dear. UK food security threatened by extreme flooding. Record-breaking rain since last autumn has left fields of crops underwater and livestock's health at risk, adding to pressures on food producers. The National Farmers Union, or NFU, has warned that flooding and extreme weather, which is linked to climate change, will undermine UK food production unless farmers get more help from the government. The National Farmers Union President Rachel Hallos said UK farmers were on the front line of climate change, one of the biggest threats to UK food security. It's a very topical issue at the minute. Nothing going on around the world. Coral mass bleaching. A fourth Global mass bleaching event is devastating the world's coral reefs as extreme ocean heat takes its toll. That's according to the US National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. Coral is vital to the planet. It's nicknamed the sea's architect because coral creates vast structures that house 25% of all marine species, thus sustaining ocean life. Now, bleaching of coral happens when coral gets stressed and turns white because the water it lives in is too hot. And once coral has died, creatures like fish that navigate using coral noise, as it's called, can struggle to find their way home. Now, this latest coral mass bleaching event has been confirmed throughout the tropics and is likely to become the most severe on record. There's a particular concern for the Great Barrier Reef after footage released by the Australian Marine Conservation Society showed bleaching 80 metres below the surface of the water. Oh dear. Anyway, our good news now. Good news. Magical mangroves. So hundreds of different species have been discovered in a mangrove forest in Cambodia, highlighting the critical role that these type of ecosystems play in conservation. Up to now, 700 different species have been found in the mangrove forest, but the survey team suspect there could actually be as many as 10 times that amount of species in the mangrove.
Right, hundreds of species from bats to birds and fish to insects were identified during the study of the Peam Krasop Sanctuary.
That's, well done, Paul.
That's P-E-A-M-K-R-A-S-O-P Sanctuary. And the adjacent Koi Kapik Ramsar Reserve in Cambodia. Oh, no. In Cambodia. So, hairy-nosed otters, smooth-coated otters, large-spotted civets, long-tailed macaws and fishing cats. What the hell are they? As well as a wide range of bat species were among the residents recorded by the survey, which was funded by the conservation group Fauna and Flora International. The variety of wildlife has staggered biologists. Mangrove forests form narrow strips of tangled wooded land on coast in tropical and subtropical latitudes. They are important because they are made up of trees that have adapted to grow in salt or brackish water, which most other plants cannot tolerate. However, over the past few decades, the plant has lost about 40% of its mangroves, which have often been chopped down to make way for beach resorts or agriculture. Yet, mangroves play critical, important roles in protecting the land and its inhabitants. Mangroves also protect inland areas from tsunamis and storms, trap carbon far more efficiently than any other types of woodland. Scientists say that mangroves play a key role in preserving ecosystems because they act as two-way barriers between the land and the sea. They slow soil erosion into the ocean and protect coastal communities from flooding and storms.
Wow. So who knew? Mangroves, there you go. River restoration is another bit of good news. A record number of dams were removed across Europe in 2023, according to a new study by Dam Removal Europe, which has led to the reconnection of more than 4,300 kilometres of rivers, benefiting diversity and climate resilience. The other good news story, Cycling City. This is a really interesting one. Coming soon to a town or city near us, maybe. More people in Paris are choosing to use a bicycle rather than a car as their preferred mode of transport, according to a new study. Paris has set a target of becoming one of the most bike-friendly cities in Europe, with plans to turn itself into a cycling city by 2026, which isn't long ago. Long to go, should I say.
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a bus, it's a bell and rings and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You're the kind of girl that fits in with my world. I'll give you anything, everything, if you want things. I've got a cloak, it's a bit of a joke. There's a tear up the front. If you think it could look good, then I guess it should. You're
Right, by Pink Floyd. Interesting. Came off their compilation album Relics back in 1971. Played that because we're talking about, well, Paris becoming a cycling city. Eh? Interesting stuff. Just tuned in, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. We should have our PG on the line. She says...
Four, three...
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Peddling an old track, then.
Oh, peddling an old track. I'll tell you what, there's some cracking stuff out there. Oh. Any excuse to play an interesting bit of music, Paul?
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. So what's caught your eye, then, in the science news this week?
Oh, slightly older one, but just over a week ago, I think I saw that. An article about modern life amplifying a hearing crisis.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And saying that cases of tinnitus, which is the ringing in your ears, have shot up by 50% in the last 15 years in the UK.
Wow.
And they put it down to the pressures of sort of modern living, but essentially things like continually wearing headphones.
Oh dear, I better take mine off then, Paul.
Yeah, well, we've been speaking about those people before who sort of wander around in life sort of encapsulated in their own sound envelope and don't sort of pay attention to the world around them. So then they wonder when cars screech to a halt. Mm-hmm. What's the matter with them?
Yeah, indeed. But,
this problem's happening and basically that... you're getting hearing a ringing or a buzzing sound, and there's nothing outside. It's actually an internally sort of produced sound. So they say that they can't actually pin down a single entity for the increase, but it's thought that it's just fueled by the modern approach to headphones, an aging population, because it does happen with age as well, and COVID and rising levels of stress and anxiety potentially have contributed to it. But it's taken the number of UK adults with the condition to an estimated 7.6 million people.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's... I've suffered from it very briefly. My dear old mum used to have it a lot. I think if I've had a cold or anything for a while, I can sort of get a slight ringing in my ears.
Yeah, my uncle, he worked in the steelworks, but he was also of that generation that he loved his rock music, and he has tinnitus. And, it's a fine line between, was it the steelworks, was it too many rock concerts? Is it a bit of both?
Yeah, well, I think, rock... started out with low-level amplifiers. Vox 8030 is one of the favourites, which is a 30-watt amplifier. but then they went into kilowatts of sound. And again, one of the modern things that I hear quite often with these sort of smaller cars going past is that they've got a massive sound system. And I was surprised in the early days to see reports of a 1,000-watt sound system inside a car.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's one of those things. Like I say, it's modern life. We seem to have got into that. But they're saying next year the numbers forecast to rise again, up to 8 million, or 15% of the adult population. That's compared with 5.3 million in 2010.
Wow, that's a big jump. Then the other thing I would say as well, Paul, because I suffer from, hay fever and stuff. So I have like a prescription nasal spray. I always take one a day, hay fever tablets. Many years ago, I was having trouble with my ears. Mm. It felt like I got a noise in my ears. And it's like a hissing of a radiator hissing, that type of sound.
Yeah.
And I was pretty certain it was inside my ears. So I went to the doctors. First thing they say is, are you sure? Did anybody else hear this noise? And she looked in my ears and she said, You're not managing your hay fever well enough, and that's affecting, it's all interlinked, isn't it? And sure enough, she put me on a prescription nasal spray and it sorted itself out. But that as well is another issue, but stress and anxiety as well, because it's all, you know, blood pressure and it's all to do with the ears, yeah?
Yeah, I'll say sort of various illnesses can do it. Age can bring it on as well. So I say it's very difficult to pinpoint it, but it is growing. And the citing that becoming acclimatised to headphones, again, the danger is that you push the volume up. Especially if you're doing sports things where people go jogging with headsets on, you've got your internal sort of movement, and so the sort of temptation is to crank up the volume a bit. And it's one of those things, if you come away from a big rock concert, quite often you'll have that kind of background threshold of noise in your hearing.
Mm. Yes.
Just because of the pressure it's been under. I remember going with Graham to the O2 a few years ago, and I was surprised when I got in there that they were supplying earplugs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember going out on the road with the sort of disco that I used to run with my friends, and they were trying to introduce a light system which climbed up, and when it hit 100 decibels, it would power the system off. And I think they were trialling that in the O2 in the early days. So it is one of those things. I say, modern life, music, we've amplified it more. It used to be that you got to drag, you know, 50, 100 people in for a symphony orchestra to make a really big noise. But nowadays you can do it with a little speaker on the bedside. So it's,
indeed. Another interesting, I haven't been to the cinema since I went to see one of the very early Harry Potter films at Meadow Hall. And yep. The surround sound was so loud. I just couldn't bear it. So I've never been back to a cinema.
No. I think it's very difficult now because it's become such an integral part of the big feature films. You'll get quite often, you know, massively sort of amplified music around things like car chases and
yes,
you know, big epic events, and it can be quite sort of distracting. I mean, I do remember many years ago going to Earl Marshall, and they used to have a local guys put together a wall of speakers in the place where they used to do sort of dancers, discos. I was walking down the corridor towards a row of doors into this place, and it was so loud, the doors were flipping open. So it's to the beat, which was quite amazing to look down the corridor and see the doors dancing.
I think the other thing as well, years back, equipment, you know, if you didn't have really, really high-end music equipment, stuff would distort quite quickly. Yep. When you turned it up. You know, we bought quite a nice hi-fi many, many moons ago, 30 years ago probably, and one thing I noticed, it didn't distort. And so you could turn it up. I mean, you really can't turn it up other than beyond 10 p.m. But, yep, you know, on the dial. But actually, if you turned it up higher than that, You'd think about it and think, hang on a minute, that's really hurting my ears. But because it hasn't distorted, you don't notice it straight away.
Mm.
So I think that's another thing. Modern technology now is phenomenal, isn't it, compared to years back?
Yeah, absolutely. And so they're trying to guide people. They're saying that if your content's about 10 decibels above the noise, as a result of that, you're listening at around 95 dB. And that's not recommended to listen to at a level for more than 60 minutes. So going to a big concert for 2, 3, 4 hours is pushing things a little bit. COVID's also thought to be another cause, with an estimated 4% of the current cases having some relation to suffering from COVID. And it's from a Tinnitus UK survey, which found stress and anxiety account for about 25% of the current cases, and overall 35% of people with tinnitus believe their condition was caused by exposure to loud noise, workplace, live music or headphones. And there's no cure for tinnitus.
No.
So effective treatments are difficult. Therapies in short supply. NICE recommend cognitive behavioural therapy, if only you could get it. Although 1 in 20 people in the survey said they were offered that by the NHS. So, a factor in modern life, tinnitus.
It's a difficult thing to deal with as well, because it's always there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it kind of leads on to something else that I was looking at, and I can sort of tip my hat to Ogu. He was speaking about biofuels and things, and human waste was...
Was
sort of mentioned. So I did spot a very brief article about plans for the world's first commercial factory converting human waste to sustainable aviation fuel.
Wow.
It's been announced that biofuel company Firefly wants to develop a plant in Harwich in Essex and expects to begin supplying lower carbon fuel from about 2028. It's reached an agreement with Wizz Air, the line, to provide up to 525,000 tonnes over 15 years.
Wow.
They've gone into collaboration with Anglian Water, who will provide the biosolids.
Clever, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a product of the wastewater treatment process, and Firefly want to apply that in their pilot scheme for this facility. It's made from sustainable sources, meaning its production involves around 70% less carbon than conventional fuel. And we have sort of noted Sheffield University with producing similar fuel. It did the trial, I think, last year with Virgin Atlantic. They flew a complete leg from here across to America on the new fuel. So... interesting things happening, and little bit of a thing on sound, that the streaming platforms are going to list nature as a recording artist.
I like it,
Paul. Do you know, modern world's amazing, isn't it?
It's fantastic. So really sort of, I think, Ellie Goulding is among those who've collaborated with the project. Her track Brightest Blue remix features nature sounds from the rainforest in Colombia. And Aurora has collaborated with a newly established artist on a remix of her song A Soul With No King. And other artists who've collaborated, people like Indian singer Anuj Jain, and English indie band London Grammar.
Wow.
Have done things. And I think Paul McCartney, a long time ago, collaborated with the Blackbird for his track Blackbird.
Oh, interesting. Hey, you know, Radio 3 often play bird music, bird song, because it's like well-being. It's, you know, it's to listen to a bird singing. It's fantastic.
I think there was a very early sort of... example where they used to play, I forget her name now, Lady Cellist.
And oh, she went out, Jacqueline Dupre, maybe?
I think it's before that. Oh. I think it's a local one. But she went out into the woodland and played with a nightingale.
Ah,
so
interesting.
So that was a famous thing in and around the old BBC. And then I think, apart from a witch thing, because I've got an elm at the bottom of my garden.
Oh, have you? Oh.
And obviously, there's a problem of Dutch elm disease, but an ancient lone witch elm has evaded the Dutch elm disease, and because of that, they're trying to spread them around. So about 200 seedlings have been taken from this ancient plant in Scotland, which goes by the name of the Last Ent, which is a reference to Tolkien,
in
Lord of the Rings, the Tree Guardians. It was named Scotland's Tree of the Year in 2019, but hopefully they're going to populate at least a lot of land in Scotland with a different version of the elm that looks to be a bit more resilient to Dutch elm disease.
Yeah, interesting times for nature. I don't suppose, did you watch Gardener's World last night, any of it?
I caught about 2 seconds of it.
Well, the only reason, I used to watch it a lot, the only reason I watched it last night because I noted that they were talking to Adam Clayton, who's the bass player with U2. And they visited his garden in Dublin, or outside of Dublin. Phenomenal. Well, he's well into nature and planting.
17 acres.
Oh, apparently he bought the house where they recorded Joshua Tree.
Yes.
But the guy who went from Gardener's World just said, I can't believe that, you know, because it's something you wouldn't think about. Yeah. You know, the bass player being like really into gardening, and
it was quite a place.
Oh, quite some way. I wonder if he'll open it, but yeah, all interesting stuff. Talking about music and stuff like that.
There are a lot of musicians who go on to do farming and agriculture in some form.
Oh yeah,
that's true.
I don't know what the link is.
Yeah, no, creativeness, maybe.
Yeah, could be, or maybe from the noises to something.
Well, Adam Clayton, interestingly, said, "I find this a great place of solace. It's to distract me from the pressures of touring."
He goes out every morning.
Goes out every morning, walks a particular route, and he loves the sound of water. He just says it takes it out of him. You know, I just thought it's fascinating. Yeah, fascinating. What a link. Who'd have known it, eh?
Yeah, I mean, we've commented before, you know, the green effect.
Indeed,
Actually bringing a house plant into your home or taking a walk out in nature. It's such a great
listening
sort of
to theme. The bird song. Also, we're thinking about the bass player out of Blur. He went into get a farm, and he's quite a revered cheesemaker, isn't he now? So there must be something something to do with that. Yeah. What a change, eh?
Always bass players, though.
Yeah, always bass players, interesting.
they probably keep time for nature, don't they?
Paul.
Oh, very funny. And on that note, brilliant talking to you, Paul. We shall speak to you Monday, Glory Days Rock Show, 1 till 3.
Look forward to it.
Okay, then, bye-bye, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Sit right down, waiting for the gift of sound and vision. Good sound and vision. Drifting into my solitude. Over my head. Don't you wonder sometimes about sound and vision?
Beautiful song there by David Bowie, of course, Sound and Vision. We're talking to RPG about all sorts of stuff to do with listening as well as looking as well. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every week from 11 till 12. Next up, we're going to talk about why there's a revolution on the way in glass making. And this caught my eye the other week. The European Union is cracking down on packaging waste. It wants packaging to be lighter, so less material is needed and less fuel is needed for transportation. The EU has therefore been developing a packaging and packaging waste regulation, or PPWR for short, which is also known as EU Directive 94/62/E, which is now in the final stages of approval. So the interesting thing is, because clearly we're not in the EU, but the EU Packaging Directive will apply to EU-based companies as well as companies importing packaging into the EU. And as a regulation, it will be binding for all EU countries and imported packaging once approved. The new rules will therefore impact any UK business involved in packaging for exports. But there's already a growing concern in the glass container industry that it will be unfairly targeted. That's because glass is relatively heavy compared to, say, plastic or aluminium. Now, glass is an interesting material. It's at 100% recyclable. And it's infinitely recyclable, so you can continue recycling it over and over again. So basically, you can recycle a bottle into another bottle forever. But whilst it's true that glass recycling is an established process, making glass, even using recycled materials, is very energy intensive because most glass making involves burning natural gas to heat the raw materials in a furnace to 1,500 degrees Celsius. Get your head around that. And of course, burning natural gas and heating the raw materials both produce carbon dioxide emissions. The other thing, which I didn't sort of realise, is glass furnaces are never turned off because it takes 12 days for a furnace to reach its operating temperature. So essentially, a furnace will run all day, every day, for its operational life, which is typically between 10 and 12 years. So, unsurprisingly, the glass industry is looking to switch from gas-fired furnaces to electric ones. And if the electricity comes from a sustainable source, then the carbon footprint is slashed, which could go a long way to helping glass firms meet their goal to become net zero by 2050. And Ogo Osmo comes on this show regularly to talk about, well, often about environmental things. Sustainable energy means it's coming from a sustainable source, so it's not coming from fossil fuels. It's coming from something that just continually renews itself, which is like wind power, solar power, or power from the tides even. So until recent years, running a furnace on electricity was considered too expensive. But electricity prices have become more competitive, so glassmakers are looking at making the switch. An extra challenge for the electric glass furnaces is plugging them in. Connections to the electricity grid often have to be upgraded to cope with the extra electricity supply. But in Oberkirchen in northern Germany, the world's most advanced hybrid glass furnace is undergoing trials at Arda Glass Packaging, or AGP for short. It's partly funded by the German government and the EU, and made by German company Sorg. It's a large furnace with a capacity of 350 tons, which is enough to make about 1 million beer bottles a day. When fully operational, it will run on 80% sustainable electricity and 20% gas, which the company Ardagh Glass Packaging says will save 45,000 tons of carbon dioxide gas per year. Now, engineers at Ardagh Glass Packaging are giving the furnace the ultimate test. Who knew? Making amber-coloured glass, which involves tricky chemistry and is more difficult to control than making clear glass. So think about that the next time you pick up an amber glass bottle. The company says that once the hybrid furnace has proved itself, then the next step could be replacing the natural gas with hydrogen. Interesting. So it's going to go eventually. When fully operational, it will be run on 80% sustainable electricity and 20% gas. But over time, if it works, they're going to replace that natural gas element with hydrogen. So even if the industry does make the switch to electric or hybrid furnaces, it still has other problems to solve. Now, the raw materials needed to make glass include sand, soda ash and limestone. They all emit carbon dioxide gas while they're being heated up. They account for about 20% of the carbon emissions of the glass making process. So the industry hopes that using more recycled glass in the production process will cut those emissions, but getting enough unwanted glass is a challenge. Who knew that, eh? So you must recycle your glass, but be careful how you recycle it. Some recycling facilities allow you to chuck any colour glass and they will sort it in the post-processing. Do not in any event try and recycle Pyrex.
No.
Because they can't melt that. So one scientist, though, who has studied the packaging industry, says the answer might be just to use less glass. In a paper published in 2020, Alice Brock, who's a PhD researcher at Southampton University, compared the environmental impact of glass, plastic and aluminium containers and found that glass had the most detrimental impact on the environment because even recycled glass has an incredibly high energy demand. Food for thought there. Think about it the next time you pick up a glass. Great track there by Joy Division called Glass. Played that because talking about why there's a revolution on the way in glass making, the EU packaging directive, which will come into force soon. Watch this space. Very interesting. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Starting at 12 will be the film show, All Being Well. I can't see them out there yet, but I'm sure they'll be in soon. I've heard nothing. Next up, we're going to talk about Chris Packham's fascinating facts about birds.
Yes, what nests are really for? Nests are not birds' homes. They are simply where they lay eggs and often raise their chicks. But some birds take a lot more effort than others over the building process. From the few gathered stones on the beach of the ringed plover nest to a long-tailed tit's masterpiece of lichen and feathers woven together with spider silk. I never knew that.
There you go.
And wild buzzards, hawks and kites make their own stick nests. Falcons will just use old crow's nests or simply lay eggs on ledges with a bit of soft lining.
So just think, when you see all them bits on your drive or your garden, what birds have picked up and dropped.
Yeah, like when cut grass, yeah. We know it well. How birds see. A bird's eyes have more cells that capture information and carry it to the brain than we do, giving them a wider range of vision. For example, they can see colours in the ultraviolet range, which we are unable to, and the eyes of night hunters, such as owls, are more sensitive than ours to low light. Right. Male ducks are sometimes flightless.
Oh.
Ducks look their best in winter when they pair up during the courtship phase, and males have their dullish plumage in summer. Male mallard ducks molt their wing feathers in all in one go, becoming flightless for a while. During this process, the male plumage is similar to a female's, apart from the telltale yellow bill. Swifts can fly for months on end.
Well, we know that, yeah.
We do, yes. I think they actually sleep on the flight.
They sleep on the wing, yeah.
They don't ever touch down. Some birds are capable of high-speed aerobatics in short bursts, such as swallows. Others are supremely efficient endurance flyers, such as godwits, which can remain airborne for days at a time, and swifts, which live on the wing for months on end.
Indeed. And the last fact, well, from Chris Packham, I think he brought a new book out a while back. Some birds can smell worms underground. Ooh, okay. So for many birds, smell and taste are not highly developed senses, although studies have revealed they have greater significance than once thought. Woodcocks, for example, can smell worms in the soil. Birds have relatively few taste buds, but sweet, sugary tastes make them return to valuable foods such as berries. So it's not the colour, it's the sweetness.
Just do what you can do.
very nice track, that little birdie, Wynton Marsalis, but I don't think it was him singing. So we're talking about Chris Packham's Fascinating Facts About Birds, Part 2. We did Part 1 quite a long time ago now. You're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We've just got time to sneak in another story. The future of seafood could be a ship worm. Doesn't sound very exciting, does it? A ship-eating sea worm could soon be filling supermarket shelves in the seafood aisle. The slimy white mollusk, also known as tamilok in the Philippines, where it is eaten fresh and raw and dipped in coconut vinegar with salt and chili, is being grown by researchers at Cambridge and Plymouth University who plan to farm it for consumers in the UK. Now, rather than having a shell, it makes its home in wood submerged in seawater, boring into it using two small plates on its head. The researchers believe the shipworm offers a sustainable alternative to the big five, and by that they mean cod, haddock, salmon, tuna and prawns, that together make up 80% of seafood consumed in the UK. But rather than calling it a shipworm, David Willer from Cambridge and his colleague Ruben Shipway from Plymouth, both from the universities, of course, prefer the term the naked clam. Yeah, I think that is favourable to shipworm. And their plans for how it will be served. In the Philippines, they're battered like calamari or in a marinated stew.
Doing nothing for me.
If you're going to do them as a mass market consumer product, we're thinking they'll be mashed up like fish fingers. But it's just a way of looking forward to be more sustainable in seafood and not fishing and overfishing our waters. Fantastic stuff, eh? That was a track called The Fish, would you believe? By Yes, because we're talking about shipworm, the future of seafood in the UK, perhaps, but not if they call it a shipworm. Anyway, naked clam sounds better, doesn't it? We are going to sign off now. Stick with us for the film show next. We've got Martin and Denise in the house waiting. They can't just wait to get in. We're going to play out now with a track called B-Movie Bedtime by Doctors of Madness. Bye-bye.
So restless, I can't seem to get no release. Drives in my mind full of B-movie bedtime, and all I can see are police. And baby blue junkies and dive Mona Lisas and doctors who give you disease. And black bony fingers and rock and roll singers who end up by selling degrees. Oh yeah, when it seems, by the end of the night, I'll be down on my knees, all as high as they kite. All right. Well, love, I don't care where you've been. You've been hanging around with those girls again. I know what it's like when you can't sleep at night, cause your man's in some other world. Oh, you got snow on your nose. I got a load in my head. I sit and take off while you take off your clothes. Together we get wet in bed, in bed we get right. Oh yeah, and it seems by the end of the night, I'll be down on my knees, all as high as they kite. A celebrity now and then. Ooh, time is by like a dirty French drink. Oh, you're screaming and it seems it's an end. Oh, you got blood on your fingers. Your stall is gonna wash it away. It's still like a bed.